It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
Today on Rambling About Cars, Model S Plaid, Lucid Air Dream, Rivian R1T, Mustang Mach-E. Heck yeah, it's the electric episode. We're finally getting there. When we've got a very special guest who's driven all of those and more. We got to jump right into this. So Electric Evangelist, it's podcast time. I'm Christopher Smith. Across the way is Chris Bruce. And tell us who we have with us today.
We have Tom Malogny back with us. If you've been a longtime listener to Rambling About Cars, you might remember him from when we were talking about electric trucks. I think that was episode like 23,
that was,
24.
That was like 100 years ago,
it
man.
Feels it feels that way. Like... So we will be talking about one electric truck today, but he's coming back with us because he is probably one of the... You told like us when we were talking
barely
about this
a
episode,
handful of people.
Maybe 20 people to have driven a Lucid Air, Tesla Model S, Plaid, and Rivian R1T, and several more. I said you mentioned that you got a took delivery of a Taycan today to drive as a press car. So let's get into it, Tom.
Tell us, Tom, just about some of the other vehicles you've driven just recently.
Yeah, it's been a really good run. You know, with during COVID. Not too many automakers really held press drives, the media drives. Some of them did. They were regionalized. They were small. But kind of it seemed like since September, the floodgates opened. So we had all these automakers that had been holding back their cars for a while. And now they're like, okay, we're doing these press drives. So starting the first week in September, I drove the BMW i4 M50, the BMW iX, the Rivian R1T, the Lucid Air, Mustang Mach-E GT and Mach-E GT Performance. What am I missing? The Hummer EV and the Tesla Model S Plaid.
And so, I mean, Tesla doesn't really do a lot of media stuff.
Yeah, I should have given you that caveat. Tesla doesn't do any media stuff.
Right.
So I had to rent one. So I'd been waiting until one was available on Turo here in New Jersey, and I got like the very first one that became available. I won't tell you how much I paid for it because you'll really think I'm nuts, but it was insanely expensive for a 24-hour rental. But I got a lot of content out of it. I made two different videos. I did a range test, a DC fast charging test. So you know, I'll get some content out of that. But yeah. All the other ones were organized press drives and cool stuff. I mean, I got to drive the best of the best that's going to be coming out, in the market, really soon.
So, and Tom, you do great. Let me just jump in here really quick, Bruce, because you do really great videos. I had my first electric experience over the weekend with a Mach-E, Mustang Mach-E. And Tom, I was actually using some of your videos to kind of guide me along. Okay, here's basically how Mach-E operates. Here are some tips for charging. Anybody that's listening out there, if you're thinking about an EV, I mean, we'll have links to Tom's videos here in the article that goes up, in the video that goes up. I don't know if there's anybody else that I would trust as much on EV knowledge as Tom. So we really appreciate you having you here. You got to tell us about Model S Plaid, though, man.
Well, no, wait. That was my...
Sorry. I stepped on Bruce.
I have not heard anyone else who has gotten to drive a GMC Hummer EV, and we hadn't discussed this beforehand, but give me your quick bullet points about it before we go into Model S Plaid, because that's obviously important.
Okay.
But yeah, you are the only person I know who has touched a GMC Hummer EV in production form. So give us the bullet points.
So huge vehicle. The first impression when you get and sit in it, it feels like you're... like a mile from the passenger. You know, we had GMC
like original Hummer
representative. Exactly. Yeah. You get that feeling. I mean, this thing weighs over 9,000 pounds. So,
wow.
You know,
I didn't know it weighed that much.
It weighs over 9,000 pounds, and it goes 0 to 60 in 3 seconds flat.
That's
think about that.
Bruce is laughing, and I'm like
a brick shooting out of a cannon.
I want to know how many cars that you guys have driven that go 0 to 60 in 3 seconds.
None.
Nope.
Okay, so imagine this giant 9,000 pound beast. When you're sitting in it, you're sitting up high. You know, like I said, it feels like, you know, the passenger is like, you know, not even within arm's length of you, because it's really wide and big, you know, and it has a completely different feeling than when you drive a car or even the Rivian R1T, which also happens to go 0 to 60 in 3 seconds flat exactly also. But the vehicles just felt totally different. I mean, this thing just felt like it was an unstoppable, you know, force of nature that, you know, it would like just drive through a brick wall. Like, you know, if you rode into a house, you'd go out the other side. You wouldn't get stuck in the living room. You'd go through the living room, through the bathroom, you know, crush the bathtub on the way and go out through the kitchen and just drive through the
blast through the garage, drive over the Honda Civic in the garage.
Yeah, and I guess depending on how fast you were going, that might happen because it's 9,000 pounds, you know, and, you know, it's just a beast of a vehicle. That wasn't a very long media drive. That was the shortest one. It's very controlled by GM. And, you know, we only got to drive a certain distance off road. They let us go off road, and then when it was time to go on the actual track and do the watt, do you guys know what Watts to Freedom is?
Yes.
Yeah, it's that launch mode. I wasn't allowed to drive it with Watts to Freedom, which was a little disappointing. So the GM rep had to do that, but this wasn't like just like, you know, a rep. This was an engineer that, you know, tests the powertrain and so forth, so they knew what to do. And we did two or three 0 to maybe 100 runs. And it's crazy. Like, it just, you know, it feels so insane, I think, partially because of the vehicle you're in. That makes a difference at your surroundings.
Totally.
You know, then being in a low-slung sports car or even the Model S Plaid, you know, it's just so much power and so much capability climbing rocks and everything. And the camera system is so cool. It's got cameras all over the exterior of the vehicle, underneath, on the outside of the wheels and on the inside of the wheels. So when you're going over rocks, you've got views. So you can see if there's a sharp rock on the inside of your tire about to slash it. You know, so it's really good for off-roading. Now, the Rivian had the exterior cameras on the on the outside of the wheels, which we use because that was, we'll talk about that later. But we did like a 60-mile deep into the Colorado Mountains off-road trail with the R1T. That was a serious, you know, test drive. But the Hummer was very controlled. It was only for about 20 minutes. And it was just kind of to give us a little taste of what the vehicle can do. But it's a cool truck.
So going from the crazy marketing lingo that is Watts to Freedom, let's talk about the Plaid. Because I
don't WTF? What?
They're just weird marketing terms. You got to admit that as a former PR guy.
Yeah, yes, I'll totally admit that. I'm a little jealous. At first I was like, Watts to Freedom. What kind of stupid? Oh, I get it now. Okay, well done.
And you're going to say that when you drive it, guys. Like when you do a launch, a WTF launch, that's exactly what you're going to say. I have a couple short video clips on Twitter, my Twitter account, of they had cameras set up on us when and of course our drivers would surprise us, like, you know what I mean? Right. They'd be like, okay, we're gonna go on 3-1 and then stomp on it, like, you know, like, you know, you didn't even hit 2 and you're getting thrown back in the seat. So it really felt amazingly fast, and I think part of that was that visceral feeling was that of the vehicle I was in. You don't expect it. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So, I tell you, I'm really curious to be in a Tesla Semi if that ever comes around.
Yeah.
You know, a Tesla Semi doing 60 in what, like 5 seconds in a Semi?
Yeah, I don't know the need for that. You know, and if it ever comes around, like you said, we're still waiting to really see the production version of the Cybertruck, and, you know, I love Tesla. I own a Tesla, but you know, you have to always take a little bit of what they say with a grain of salt, yep, and wait for things to come to fruition. Yeah, that's the Model S range test. And then my YouTube channel, I have the DC fast charging test that I did with the Plaid. So
with the volume off, we're going to watch a little of this test while we're talking about the Model S Plaid. Cool.
Check us out, Motor One Podcast on YouTube. You should also like and subscribe there. We're supposed to say that in the beginning, but this is the electric episode. We're too excited, people.
Exactly. Fun stuff.
Model S Plaid, 0 to 60, 1.9 seconds. That's what Tesla says. Tom, were you able to replicate Tesla's result at all?
So I don't have good enough instrumentation to say if it was 1.9 or 2.1 or 2.3. And plus, that is with that is with rollout, and it's with using the sticky substance you put on the ground.
The VHT, I think.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. So that's to get it down under 2 seconds, you have to use that VHT. And
track.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, but the one thing I could tell you, it was the fastest thing I've ever driven in my life. And it actually was the only car I've ever driven that I did 3 or 4 0 to 100 runs back to back. I live in a very rural area, and there's some country roads here where no cars are on, and they're farmland, so I could actually play around a little bit. I think after the third one or the fourth one, I had to stop because I felt like I was getting sick. And I know that's funny, but the truth of the matter is I've driven tons of fast cars, and I've been on tracks where professional drivers had made me say, okay, stop, that's enough, you know, mm-hmm, because you know, I just couldn't take it, because after a few laps, you know, your body's just not used to that.
Right.
But I never, driving a car, like, felt like I had to stop. I was getting dizzy. It literally drains the blood from your head. And, you know, it goes 0 to 100 in 4.2 seconds. So I know we talk 0 to 60 a lot, you know, but think about that.
Realize that.
Think about that. When you step on it, and in 4 seconds, you know how quick 4 seconds comes. You mm-hmm can be on like a suburban, you know, street, you know, and you could be doing 100 miles an hour before you get to the end of the corner. And the crazy thing, we talked about this on the podcast, and I had one of our one of the people on the podcast, Kyle Connor, who's fantastic, knows as much about cars as anybody.
He's been on the show. Yeah.
Yeah. He and I disagreed on this. I kind of said that, you know, like I kind of warned people. So look, if you have enough money to get one of these things, don't let your teenage kids drive it, period. Don't let them take it out on a weekend.
Don't let anybody who's not really familiar with any sort of power drive it. I mean,
I know I wouldn't have been ready for this. An 18-year-old version of me would wrap this thing around a telephone pole or go off a road and drive through somebody's house. Yeah. Because it is so, guys, I'm telling you, you have to get a hold of one just to play with it. It is so fast. Like, it's hard to comprehend. You stomp on it, and before you look at it, you're doing 80, 90 miles an hour, you know, in a matter of a couple of seconds. It's so powerful. I mean, it's great. It's amazing that Tesla made this. But, I mean, you're talking the quickest production car ever made. You know, beating all the hypercars that are out there, the $2 million, $3 million hypercars. And I know then some people say, well, you know, you never really said this about those cars. But, you know, if your dad buys a Bugatti, you know, and you've got that kind of coin, you kind of know, like, this thing is dangerously fast. But you hop into the Model S, and it tricks you. Because it looks like a family sedan. It looks like our average, you know, run-of-the-mill, you know, this, you know, mom's driving you to school. But, guys, when you stomp on that thing, it's nuts. I mean, it's the fastest thing I've ever driven.
Now, let me just jump in there, because it's something else that we'll talk about later.
What we're seeing on the video now is what I want to talk about.
The yoke. Oh, we'll get to the yoke here in a second.
Yeah.
Towards the end of my Mach-E experience this past weekend, I was talking to a gentleman at the hotel I was at because he saw the Mach-E. He had no idea that Ford was even doing anything electric, but he had looked at Tesla, and he had driven the Plaid, and he said that it was it was wildly fast, but I mean, it scared him. It was just too much. And I can totally see that. And I even told him, I said, you know, I have a lot of respect for you saying that, because when you talk about something going 0 to 60 in under 2 seconds, hell, even 2 seconds, 2.5, 3 seconds, that's a different level of performance that you cannot really grasp until you've done it. Your brain has to pretty much recalculate. You have to rethink everything you know about driving, because going that fast, accelerating that hard, you're not looking just, you know, in front of the car or a little ways in front of the car. If you're going to touch that throttle, you have to be looking way down the road, way, way further than you would ever consider before. And that's something that takes a little bit of training. That's something that takes a little bit of getting used to. And I mean, I just wonder, because these cars, I mean, they're expensive, but they're not stupid expensive. They're not $3 million hypercars.
Exactly.
A Model S, a Model S Plaid is what, 130, 140?
Yeah, I think it's 135. So it's within the reach of, you know, a lot of people in society now. I mean, not the three of us probably, but you know, if you're a lawyer, you're a doctor, or that's the price range that you're playing with. And Bruce, the issue I had was, my concern, biggest concern, is somebody will, you can so quickly get to a speed. I said before, 0 to 100 in like 4.2 seconds. Mm-hmm. Okay, so now what do? You're at 100 miles an hour on a road that was not meant to be 100 miles an hour, because you're used to being able to step on a car for a few seconds. You know, it doesn't get to a speed that you can't control. But now you're going 100 miles an hour on a back road, and it can't handle the turn that's coming up. The brakes aren't designed for it's way under braked. Like this car, S, it talked to any serious, I didn't get to drive it like on a track or anything, but look at the videos out there of the people that did, that took a Plaid out on the track, and they're like, whoa, these brakes cannot handle the weight of this car and the power it has. So, you know, it's, you know, in the wrong hands, it's dangerous. And I fear that we're going to see issues. We're going to hear stories about people where, you know, somebody just drove off a road and into someone's house or something, because it's that fast. I've never said that about a car before, and I've driven everything. It's frighteningly fast. And it's crazy to say that, you know.
I'm glad you brought that up, because that was going to be a question I was going to ask. We know it's fast, but I mean, with that power, that's accelerating is 33% of vehicle operation. Slowing down and turning are the other ones. And I mean, it sounds like it falls a little bit short there, at least on the slowing down part.
It does. You know, and it's the only I've never said this about a car before, but I think it's too fast. I know that's crazy, and you know, you'd say, oh, it's never too fast, but if I was in the market for that car, if I was getting a Model S now, I would definitely go for the long range, not the Plaid, because it's $35,000 less, and it goes 0 to 60 in 2.5 seconds, I think, or whatever. it's so slow. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. You know? And my grandmother is laughing at that.
So, like, you know, that's the play for me, because you get like 99% of what the Plaid is, and it costs so much less. So I actually rented one of those a month ago when I was in California, and drove it for a day. And I mean, it felt like, you know, as fast as I mean, I remember driving it and saying, like, the Plaid can't feel much faster than this. But, you know, it totally does. Like, I don't know how it felt that much faster, because it's not that much faster. It is faster, but it felt like I was driving two different cars. It was like, you know, the Model S long range I thought was perfect. It was as fast as you could, you know, like you couldn't need anything faster. But the Plaid just, it felt unsafe. It felt like when you mash that accelerator all the way down, even at 40, 50 miles an hour, within 2 or 3 seconds, you're going faster than the car can handle. You know, and unless you're on a track, or unless you're a really good professional driver, I see a lot of people getting in trouble with these cars.
Yeah.
So, Tom,
I had never thought of this until we started having this conversation, but it got me curious. So I live in northwestern Ohio. We definitely get snow. Smith, you live in South Dakota. You definitely get snow. And Tom, I know you live in New Jersey and there's snow there. And the Plaid is too new for anyone to have driven one in the snow yet. But you have driven other Teslas. Mm-hmm. Is the stability control, traction control, stuff like that smart enough to kind of dial things back if you are on a snowy highway, snowy back road, something like that, to kind of make it safe? Or are you just kind of is it like a normal car, quote unquote, where your right foot is the thing that's deciding how safe you are?
So yeah, I haven't driven the Plaid in the snow, so that's a different ball game. My Model 3 is an all-wheel drive Model 3, mm-hmm. and I always put winter tires on all my cars. I think mm-hmm. that's the best and smartest thing to do if you live in areas where it snows. Okay. I live in northern New Jersey, so we do get a considerable amount of snow. Southern New Jersey, not as much, but where I live, close to Pennsylvania, we get a good amount of snow. So I always put winter tires on my vehicles, and my Model 3's been great with all-wheel drive. I put it in chill mode, which is like an eco mode, is what Tesla calls it, chill mode. So okay. it limits the amount of power that gets sent to the motor. Gotcha. So it kind of tones it down a little bit. And that's, you have to be cognizant of regenerative braking on electric vehicles when it's icy, because if the traction control doesn't work with the regen properly, you can get some slippage. But this, the Plaid, it's so powerful, even in chill mode. I wonder how it'll be. I would definitely recommend people that live in areas that get snow and ice to put winter tires on a Plaid, or really any car.
Yeah, totally.
It's the right thing to do.
We've had a tire expert on the show. Like we understand the need for winter tires. I was just curious because I wasn't sure how good Tesla had kind of dialed that stuff in, but it sounds like it's pretty good, assuming you've got the right rubber on, which you should anyway. So
yeah, cool. My Model 3 has been great in the snow, and I drove last year. We had a lot of snow here, and it went through everything. So good rubber, and it's fine.
And well, so I got to bring up the other thing. Oh, Smith, go ahead.
I was going to bring up the same thing you were going to. In fact, I'm going to switch the share screen here.
Go for it.
To talk about Tom's article, Tesla's new Model SX steering yoke must be a joke. Joke, seriously? Tom, I mean, the Plaid that you drove, did it have the yoke?
Yeah, they all do.
Okay.
It's not an option. You can't get a steering wheel. But,
I mean, what's having driven it, is it a joke, or is it not as bad as people would think?
So I first want to qualify. I wrote that article way back when Tesla first announced that they were going to have this yoke. Mm-hmm. And I really didn't think that was going to be the only option. I thought, they would probably maybe have it available,
that
but
happy
not.
Koala but, look.
Yeah. But yeah, right. It looks like a sloth, right?
Koala sloth, sure. Yeah.
So, but hey, I was wrong. It's the only thing available. They don't offer a steering wheel, and this is an option. And if you look at some of the people online, some of the YouTubers that have it and they live with this, and it took a while, but after a while, I got used to it and I actually like it now. So. My whole point is, and I talk about that in the range test video, is now I've driven two Model S's that have the yoke, and a combined 500 or 600 miles. Now, that's not a lot of driving, but it's a decent amount. It's not, I've spent more than, a few hours behind the wheel with it. Sure. And to me, at best, once you get used to it, it'll be as good as a round wheel. Okay. Like, It to me, it doesn't improve anything. And it's like anything, you get used to it. I drove it a lot. I kind of got used to it. The blinkers are still a little bit of an issue. The blinkers are on the left side of the steering wheel. And you have to, your thumb has to find it, because I don't know if you could zoom in there, but it's that left side of the steering wheel on the left of the wheel. See, to the left of that little wheel.
Oh, wow.
See those two things there? Yeah.
Okay.
So
yeah.
Those are the blinkers. So your left hand, your left thumb has to find that. And then if you go to the right side of the steering wheel, the horn is to the left of the wheel and up.
Okay, I see it. Right up in there.
Yeah. So that's how you blow the horn. And the windshield wipers are also right over there. And I found myself turning the windshield wipers on when I was like making a sharp turn, like hand over hand. But my hand would just kind of glide across the windshield wipers, and the windshield wipers would be flapping. And I'm like trying to deal with this. Like, I know it with practice, I guess you'd get good at it.
Sure.
But I still am struggling to see how it's better. Well, people say, oh, well, you get an unobstructed view of the driver's display. I never really had a problem having my steering wheel obstruct my driver's display. I don't know, maybe you guys do. That's never been an issue. It kind of looks cool. It looks like you're getting into an airplane. So, I mean, that's, if you want to say that's an advantage, it looks really cool and futuristic. But driving wise, to me, as long as I drove it, I never felt like it was better than a wheel. And to me, I love innovation. I love when automakers try something new and different, and kudos. I even give Tesla credit for going out and trying to do this. But I didn't change just for change's sake isn't really worth it. It has to be an improvement. And I didn't find an improvement over a round wheel.
Interesting. It sounds like it's better than I would expect. I'm curious to drive it now, but we should probably move on because we have a couple more vehicles to talk about. Should we go, Tom? I'll leave it up to you. Do you want to go with another quick luxurious car or a quick luxurious pickup truck?
Well, we'll jump to the truck.
Jump to the truck. Let's talk about Rivian R1T. For those that don't know, that's why I think 835 horsepower, 908 pound-feet of torque, 0 to 60 in 3 seconds, range of about, what is it, Tom, about 320 miles thereabouts?
Yeah, 314, I think it was, the 320. EPA range rating. Yeah.
Sticker is $73,000, which sounds expensive until you realize,
Ford F-150, a top-brand Ford F-150 is like 75.
Yep, it's right there with the top-of-the-line F-150 with the Ram. With the top of the line Chevy half tons.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
And Tom, you've driven these on and off road extensively. Is Rivian ready to take on Detroit?
So it's a different type of vehicle than F-150 or a Chevy Silverado. It's smaller, it's got a small bed, it's not really designed, it's not a work truck. All right. It's an adventure vehicle, and that's how Rivian is marketing it. And then that's why on this press drive that we did, which was fantastic, up in the Colorado Rockies, we were up to 13,000 feet above sea level. We did a 60-mile off-road adventure that took us, on crazy paths. Definitely I recommend the viewers check out the video I put up on Inside EVs. There's a lot of good footage in there of our off-roading and really incredibly capable vehicle. It's got four motors. They're not in-wheel motors, but
I'm Tom Allegheny with Inside EV.
Yeah, I'm Tom Allegheny.
Sorry. It took me a second to mute it.
Way to go, Bruce.
Yeah, so...
bad producer.
It was incredibly capable. Everything that we went through, it just did it with ease. And we were climbing rocks. It was really intense off-roading, and the vehicle just did it with ease. And funny thing is, we had to have, or Rivian had to have, a U.S. like park ranger come with us, because where we were going on the trails, they have to make sure that we don't go off the trails and like disturb wildlife and so forth. So they, in order to be allowed to do this, they had to have somebody, a representative, come in our convoy. And at first, the person was just like, these are electric trucks, like, they're not going to make this trail where you guys are going is like one of the toughest trails that we have,
You need a real truck for that.
Exactly. Right? And then,
what's the old saying? Leave only footprints, take only pictures, something along that. But yeah.
So, and now halfway through the whole thing, we had to stop because one of the trucks got a flat tire. And so they had to change it. And that's how intense it was. They had three different flat tires. And this was some serious rock climbing and everything that we did. The ranger, we're talking to them, and she said to Rivian, how do we get one of these for park services? Oh, she's like, this thing is incredible. She goes, I can't. She goes, it's one of the best off-road vehicles I've ever been in, and we drive all of them here. So yeah, it was really really amazing. I mean, incredibly capable off-roading vehicle, and its on-road manners was great. Also, I drove about 100 miles on road with it, and you know, smooth. It handles not like a truck. It feels more car-ish than that's the camera system. You see the side wheels, the little cameras on the side, so you could see exactly as you're going over rocks if you're, you know, going to hit a tree root or something like that.
That's impressive. So, let me just jump in really quick and remind people, Motor One Podcast, if you're listening to our podcast, jump over to Motor One Podcast on YouTube. You can see what we're talking about. And this trail that we're looking at, I mean, this, it's not a trail. It's like
a stream bed.
It's like an old stream bed or like a little gully next to a cliff. Yeah, it's nothing but rocks. And yeah, the Rivian is just walking right over it. Walking right over it. That's super impressive for any off-road vehicle, never mind one that's new and electric and something that I think a lot of people still would think, oh, you can't do that. You can't do that with an electric car. Those are toys. My kid plays with an electric truck, right?
And from a new automaker, from a company, this isn't a Ford, a Dodge, a Chevy, a GMC or something like that. This is someone that's coming in and they're showing, hey, we can do everything and more that the established companies are doing. And they're showing it right here if you're watching this video.
Yeah, you'll definitely want to check out the video that we're doing here on the podcast, and also check out Tom's videos. Tom, we're going to link the hell out of your videos in this article because people need to see this stuff. In fact, I mean, I was just talking with my father over the weekend about electric vehicles, and he said, well, how do you wash it? Well, you take it to a car wash, but it's electric. You're not supposed to get it wet. It's like, no. These are designed. It's okay. And there's footage of the Rivian going through a stream.
Three feet of water this can ford.
3 feet, 36 inches. Yes. I mean, that's, it's seriously impressive. What's your main takeaway from the R1T, from your experience?
Well, I'll tell you this. The last time we were on, we talked about the Ford F-150 Lightning, and I put in a reservation. I'm a first day reservation holder for the Lightning. I'm getting one. Mm-hmm. When I finished this this weekend drive, I went home and put a deposit on an R1T.
Oh, wow.
So, and I know three other journalists that did the same thing, that were on the press drive. So when I've never been to a drive of any vehicle and had people, when the drive is over, say, you know, I have to have one of these, you know, and three people that I know went home and ordered one as soon as the press drive was over. So, I mean, it did everything that we could throw in front of it. And the crazy thing is, it did it easily. The one thing about driving an electric all-wheel drive vehicle like this, now, you know, it has regenerative braking that holds the vehicle back. So as let's say you're climbing a really steep hill with rocks and it's bouncing back and forth, you don't have to keep the revs up to get power. You can, if you back off the accelerator a little bit, the vehicle doesn't roll backwards, and it will immediately, as soon as you touch the accelerator, start moving forward, very slowly creeping forward. There's no like rocking, like, you know, when you have to slow down with it. I mean, watch this. I mean, and normally that wheel would be locked. If it was a gas vehicle, the differential would lock. Like, you know, the wheels, all four wheels just keep spinning even when they're up over, you know, off the ground and they're not touching anything. And then as soon as they touch, they just grab and continue to pull you forward. I mean, the stuff we went through for a stock vehicle, it was just, you know, I was flabbergasted. And none of us are experienced off-road drivers that were on the press drive. And we were able to do stuff here that, like, most people would not take their off-road vehicles on trails like this. And if they'd be stuck, you know?
I saw a video just earlier today I was watching on YouTube of the R1T going up Hell's Gate at Moab. And they were even commenting. They were even commenting there. It's like for a stock pickup truck, just walking up this like it's nothing. Yeah, it's pretty impressive. I gotta say.
I was just gonna say, for non-truck fans, if you don't like the R1T, there is going to be an R1S. And Tom, am I mistaken that got delayed slightly? It was originally supposed to be out this fall, and I think it's now kind of early 2022. Am I right about that?
Yeah, slightly. The R1S was always going to come out a little after the R1T. I think that was the plan, like a month or two. Oh, and that's, we're talking about the camp kitchen too. We got to talk about that. It's going to be a couple of months after the R1T. I mean, Rivian's had a couple delays, small delays. But don't forget, this all coincided during COVID, and now there's tremendous, problems with
the supply chain.
That's what I was trying to, couldn't pull that word out of my mouth.
I just wanted people to know that, some people aren't truck people. Some people prefer an SUV, and there is an SUV directly on the horizon. It's a few months out.
Yep. And they started delivering the R1Ts. They've delivered like 150 of them or something like that, I think, mostly to Rivian employees that they were the first reservation holders. But what we're watching here on the video is it's called the Camp Kitchen Option. It's $5,000. I ordered it with mine. It's a complete kitchen that goes into the cargo tunnel. There's a cargo tunnel underneath the rear seat that goes through the vehicle that you can store a tremendous amount of stuff in if you don't have this camp kitchen option. But it snaps out in three pieces. You don't have to leave it in if you're not using it. And it has two burners.
Looks like that's an induction burner. So if you had, any sort of stainless steel or anything like that, it would cook it up real quick.
Two induction burners. It has a sink with a 4-gallon water tank, so you could wash your dishes when you're done. And on that side, it has a complete set of cutlery, pots, pans, a coffee maker, coffee cups, all that stuff's all included with it. It has everything you need right there. We ate all of our meals when we were on this expedition. We're cooked by two Rivians that had the camp kitchen. So we ate around campfires and stuff. I mean, it was a great media drive.
I got a bad feeling my parents are watching this right now, and they want one really, really, really bad.
I mean, you
this
throw
looks
the rooftop
right up their alley.
You throw the bed rack on there with a rooftop tent on it, and
that's called the 3-person tent option. I climbed up in there, and I mean, you're good to go between the camp kitchen and that tent option. I mean, that's all you need.
Everything we've seen with overlanding just in the last couple of years, it comes right away. I guess the question that I think a lot of people would ask, and I'll ask it here right now really quick because we're running a little late. Rivian is a brand new company. Are there any concerns about just the company surviving the next few years? So, I mean, since we're talking about a brand new company, a brand new vehicle, it sounds amazing.
And I would add to that,
there's no history here,
Right. Well, and just real quick, I would add to that, we know obviously the F-150 Lightning is coming, as you mentioned. You already mentioned the GMC Hummer EV pickup truck. And we know that there's going to be a Silverado /Sierra pickup truck. So I think it's a valid question.
Well, there's that, and there's also a little bit of controversy right now. I know there's a lawsuit that was just put up against Rivian. For some possible misconduct there in the workplace. Do you have any sort of additional insight into how Rivian might, might persevere here into the future?
So, not really. I mean, I have. My personal opinion on it. They're incredibly well funded. They're going to be doing the IPO now. That's going to infuse them with a ton of cash. They have an order for 100,000 vehicles from Amazon. I think it's a $4 billion order, something like that. So they're not just a one-trick pony. They've got the pickup truck, which we're focusing on now. And it's kind of different than the F-150 Lightning and the Chevy Silverado. It's definitely smaller. It's kind of like maybe Toyota Tacoma size, maybe a little bigger than that. They have the R1S coming out too. That's a SUVs. America loves pickup trucks. I mean, how many do we buy a year? 3 million pickup trucks, something like that per year.
Millions.
Yeah.
I think there's room for newcomers if they put out a good quality product. We don't know how good the quality is. I mean, that's a big, big question mark at this point. What if they launch this and 6 months into it, there's recalls and there's motor failures? And I mean, I think recalls are not
necessarily an incident, have to do with reliability.
Let's say we find real serious issues with it. I mean, let's face it, we've done some media drives. You know, I mean, nobody's put 20, 30,000 miles on one and really tested it in everywhere. I mean, who knows? We don't know that yet. We didn't know that about Tesla when Tesla started, you know.
That's true.
That was a big question. They seem to be holding up pretty well. Short term, no, I'm not worried about them at all. Long term, that would be an issue with any startup. What's next for them? Are they going to do a passenger van? They're going to be able to use that platform maybe for one more vehicle, maybe do like, you know, a minivan or a passenger van. We know they're doing the commercial van for Rivian and they're going to take orders from other companies. So, you know, I would try to maximize the use out of that platform as much as possible, get maybe a fourth vehicle out of it. And now you're not as reliant on, you know, trying to sell, you know, 300,000 pickup trucks a year once all the pickup trucks from all the other companies come in and start, competing with them.
Interesting insight. Thanks for that. Let's jump. We got to move on here. Are you ready to jump on to Lucid, Bruce?
I figured, how about we do comments and then Lucid and then your Mach-E thing?
Lucid and Mach-E? Okay? Oh, yeah, we can do that. Let's break it up here with some comments because we're about, oh gosh, we're 40 minutes into this podcast
exactly,
already.
Exactly. We're right at the halfway mark. So let's do that.
Okay.
And I have got one up here from our buddy Josiah, and it is EV related. I did that on purpose. So Josiah says, great podcast, guys. I love the auto awards as I grew up with Car and Driver's 10 Best and Motor Trend's of the Year awards. It's awesome that you guys have your own now. I have so much to say about your choices, but I'll keep it brief. For the EV, clearly both the Mach-E and the Taycan are phenomenal. And given the superior, in my opinion, Tesla Model 3 doesn't qualify, I agree with your choice. Performance vehicle. I think in a perfect world, the finalists would be the C8 and the Civic Type R and the Veloster N. Nothing against the M3 and the Golf. I hear they're great, but I have a hard time picking either of those. Sorry, considering their obvious flaws, obnoxious styling for the M3, bad tech for the Golf. He goes on for family vehicle. But Tom, I understand you don't get to listen to all of our episodes, but for our Motor One Awards, we picked the Mach-E as the best EV, but the Taycan Cross Turismo as our editor's choice vehicle. And since we're talking EVs today, I was just wondering, what do you think? You've driven both of those vehicles, I know.
Keeping in mind that that Tesla, they didn't necessarily have anything new. Right. For the model year, and obviously they don't participate.
New for us to get one, and so we couldn't get one, so we had to go with what our editors could get. So they had Mach-E, and yeah.
No, I actually, I don't know if you guys saw, I tweeted out your results on my Twitter feed, and I agreed with them. I thought it was, for the most part, the Taycan is 100%. You're locked in, but it's my favorite electric vehicle. Look, I've driven everything. Mm-hmm. If you said, look, we can give you, one car, you don't have to pay for it. What do you want to drive? I would take a Taycan Cross Turismo, and over everything else with if money was no object, it's my favorite driving car. I constantly ask Porsche for loaners. And that's why I got a new one here right now. This is the rear wheel drive base Taycan. But it's like the third or fourth time they've given me a Taycan. So they know whenever there's a new one out, they just give it to me. I'm going to do, I don't know if I can even talk. I probably can't talk about that yet. I'm going to be driving a new Taycan in a couple of weeks. So the Taycan is my favorite EV. It really is. It just drives, nothing drives as well as a Taycan. It's a true Porsche inside and out, and it has a fantastic feeling. Now, for the Mach-E, As far as the Mach-E is concerned, I like the Mach-E. I think it was I think it's a great new electric vehicle. But I might have chosen, I might have voted for the ID4 because I think that while it doesn't do anything exceptionally, it does everything really good. Okay. It costs less than the Mach-E, and I think it's going to be a more important vehicle for electric vehicle adoption because that is going to get people in electric vehicles. Not that the Mach-E doesn't, but it costs less and it's more of a family hauler. And what that's going to do is it's going to pull thousands of people out of Honda CRVs, Toyota RAV4s, Subaru Crosschecks, and put them in an electric vehicle. And once they get their first one, they're going to get another one after that.
So okay. I haven't gotten to drive an ID4. I've seen them in the flesh. I've gotten to sit in one. It's like watching paint dry to me. It's just
it's not
so
exciting.
Boring looking and so yeah. boring to sit in. And like I said, I haven't driven one. Maybe it's great to drive.
No, it's not.
It does nothing for me aesthetically.
Don't hate me, guys, but I feel that way about all Volkswagens. Even I'm sorry, even the GTI. It's
no,
just like
the GTI is the one. The GTI
is cool. It drives awesome. I owned a Mark II GTI. I get it, but they've just always felt. I've always just kind of had that.
Not always.
Kind of feeling.
Years.
Sorry, Volkswagen fans. You can send your hate mail podcast@motor1.com. Send it. Care of me. Can I read an art or can I read a comment here really quick before
you can
on?
Go for it.
Let's stick with the awards coverage since that was last week. Yep. This comes from Elric. Love the episode and your awards coverage. Great to have Clint and Brett in the episode as well. I agree. Yeah. They were awesome. I'm looking forward to next year's competition. As you mentioned, next year is going to be tight. I think that's very, very true. Yep. As a side note, please do a regular, you listening, Bruce? Do a regular ice cream challenge in between the hot sauce drinking one. This suggests that we should do more hot sauce drinking challenges.
I don't think it does.
I think it kind of does. Mr. Bruce was true to his word, soldiered on and participated, but we also don't want him to completely lose his voice by the time you guys hit your target subscriber numbers. Looking forward to hearing Mr. Smith's impressions of the Mustang next week, which is this week. Yep. Great episode. Keep the guest coming. I don't want Bruce to lose his voice either. If anybody should lose his voice during these, it's me. So I'm going to find hotter hot sauce to drink. Tom, a couple weeks ago, we put out a challenge, a subscriber challenge. If we get a certain amount of subscribers on our YouTube channel, we would drink hot sauce on the air. We did a shot of hot sauce. We reached that target. So we stuck to our word.
You did the wimpy stuff. And at least according to Clint, my stuff was much hotter. So
I thought, well, it was the Cholula Chipotle.
Oh, not regular Cholula.
Not the regular, but I mean, the Chipotle, I thought it was spicier than it was going to be. I apologize. Nope. I feel like I should redo that with like some habanero or something because I'm good with spice.
But Bruce, if we want to do an ice cream challenge, so Grater's is an ice cream place from Columbus, Ohio. I have some of their pumpkin ice cream in my freezer and it's fantastic.
Well, what we need to do is come up with a proper subscriber challenge.
Yes.
We need to hit 1,000 subscribers on our YouTube channel before this year is out. We're laying down the gauntlet here right now. 1,000 subscribers.
That'd be like 800.
We're growing slow but steady, yeah, but listeners, yeah. We are seriously going to need your help. We want 1,000 subscribers on our YouTube channel before 2021 is out.
January 1st, I will take a shot of whatever you want me to take a shot of. If we could have 1,000 subscribers on Jan 1, okay.
1,000 subscribers, the gauntlet is laid. Tell us what we should do. Give us some ideas. Email podcast.
I think
it will. I have faith in all of those listeners out there. I have faith. We've gotten so many good comments about you guys are doing great. You're the best automotive podcast out there. Yeah, and I promise you, those comments are not coming from anybody in my family. And they're not coming from anybody in your family either, Bruce.
They're
we really appreciate everything that you're doing. Now it's time to start sharing the love, spreading the love. So tell everybody that you know, Motor One Podcast on YouTube, and always, always email us podcast@motorone.com. Tell us what we should do for this subscriber challenge.
And real quick, we'll talk about Lucid, but Smith, I don't know if you saw this, but someone who is verified on YouTube, who is a beauty style blogger, responded and said that she liked the show. I don't know how she found us, but God bless her. Thanks for liking the show. I'm sorry, I don't have it up right now. I can't mention your name. I'll look it up. But
was that on YouTube comments from last week?
I think it was 2 weeks ago now.
2 weeks ago? Oh, okay. I think I do remember that. Yeah, totally not talking about me. I'm wearing a Prince and the Revolution shirt right now that I just got yesterday while I was at the airport in Minneapolis.
We were attractive. She said she liked the show. It has nothing to do with us. Clearly, if she's a beauty blogger, we aren't the show.
We aren't the show. That's very true. Very true. Let's get back on topic here, Tom. Tom's sitting over in the corner like, what the hell did I get myself into? What are these guys doing here?
Yeah, no, this is great. And yeah, I echo your sentiment. Make sure you subscribe to the channel because they're doing some great stuff over here. I know the guys at Inside EVs watch it whenever we get the opportunity to. And, you got the ball rolling now. And, yep. You know, watch, it's going to grow, because the same thing with us. We started just a year and a half ago, maybe on the Inside EVs podcast.
30 or 40 episode jump on us.
Yeah. And when it's slow in the beginning, but then once it gets rolling, you really start to pick up subscribers.
Yep. Kyle has been on. We want him to have him on again. He's on Inside EVs. Mm-hmm. Dom, unfortunately, he is also a musician. And on Wednesday nights when we usually record, he is at open mic and playing shows and doing all sorts of stuff. And
maybe there's the challenge right there. We'll get Dom on, because I don't know if you look behind me, but I have three guitars in this tiny little room of mine.
I'll play the tambourines. That's all I know how to do.
We'll put together the Rambling About Cars band.
There we go.
Couldn't possibly be as bad as Top Gear band.
All right, let's talk Lucid.
Yeah, let's talk Lucid. Tom, is Lucid ready to take on Tesla?
So, you know, it's a different type of vehicle. It really is. A Tesla doesn't make luxury vehicles. This Lucid is a luxury automaker. You know, it's more of a competitor to the Mercedes EQS than it is for the Tesla Model S. Now, of course, there'll be some cross-shopping, you know, because there aren't that many electric sedans in that price range right now. You know, I mean, it costs a lot more than a Model S. It costs a lot more than a Model S Plaid, you know. So, I mean, the launch edition that they're, what's called the Dream Edition, that they're delivering now is $169,000. I mean, that's, you know, the Model S Plaid is under $140,000. So it's considerably more than a Plaid, but you know, you really do get more, in my opinion. It's a much more luxurious vehicle, you know, better ride, smoother ride. You know, you definitely get luxury with it, and it's still brutally fast. You know, the zero to 60 times, I think, are right around 2.5 seconds for the Dream Edition Performance. There's two versions of this new Launch Edition or Dream Edition. The Performance version has 1,111 horsepower, and the range version only has 933 horsepower.
But so, the range version, that's you're getting over 500 miles out of that, right?
Yeah, 520 miles.
I think that's EPA a huge range. Number.
Yeah, that's a huge number.
That's a game-changing number, I think.
So, yeah, I mean, you compare that to the Model S Plaid I drove, the EPA range rating is 348. So, I mean, that's a huge difference. Now, if you get the long-range Model S, it's, I think, 404, but it's still over 100 miles more than it. And it's basically, you know, similar size. I think there's even more interior room in the Lucid Air. It's really remarkable engineering feat from Lucid. They really focused on efficiency. They every part of the of making this vehicle, they really focused on trying to make every aspect of the car as efficient as possible. I do a deep dive into that in the video that I did on Inside EVs, which I'm sure you're going to put a link to. Mm-hmm. I actually had a chance to speak with Lucid engineers on camera and really do a deep dive into efficiency. I mean, it's like a 25 minute segment of my video. And all we talk about is all the things they did to make it the most efficient vehicle. And what's amazing is, it's got dual motor, front motor and a rear motor. And they're actually working on a tri-motor version right now that's going to be even faster, but that's not available yet. One of the things that was remarkable to me was their motor is like a little bit bigger than a loaf of bread. And it's 670 horsepower. Yeah, that's, I spoke with Eric Bach, the vice president of product and chief engineer, in the video. And it was a fascinating interview that we had. So I urge your followers, if they're interested in doing a deep dive in efficiency and checking that out.
Oh, we'll totally link to this video. Don't worry.
The motor, I'm telling you guys, is like this big. And it's 670 horsepower. And you look at motors from all other electric vehicles, including Tesla. They're much bigger and heavier. So everything they did was focused on being as efficient, on cutting weight. And, they succeeded with it because it's a tremendously powerful vehicle. The powertrain is extremely compact. It's supposed to charge really quickly. We haven't had a full DC fast charging session with it yet, but I'm supposed to be going out to Lucid next week, and they're going to be providing me with a car so I can record a charging session from 0 to 100%. Should be the first time that's been done on a Lucid Air, and we'll have that video up on Inside EVs hopefully soon thereafter.
Nice. So, Tom, and go ahead, Bruce.
No, I just have kind of a greater question, because I have to be honest, I ignored Lucid for a very, very long time.
I think a lot of people did.
Well, no, I've been writing about cars daily for 10 or 11 years now. You know, I covered Karma, I covered Lordstown, I covered who knows what else, that, you know, maybe they built a few vehicles, or maybe they had a factory, or maybe they had a prototype, or this or that. And that's the way I felt about Lucid for a long time, that it was going to be a flash in the pan, that it wasn't going to be the real deal. And maybe it's too soon to say, and it's not, but at least they're showing the right signs that they have a production vehicle that they're building and selling. Mm-hmm. But for our viewers and listeners, what kind of cues do you use that say, okay, this is a real EV maker, this is a company that's going to come out and make something, versus this is a company that is jumping on a trend and, hey, they might have a prototype, but we're never going to see anything from them?
Sure. So first of all, what I try to look at is the people, who's behind the company. And Peter Rawlinson, the CEO, is a known commodity. I mean, he was the chief engineer of the Tesla Model S. He brought us the Tesla Model S. I've had many interviews with him, and he told me flat out when Elon called him and said, look, you know, you got to come over here and take a look at this vehicle that we're designing. You know, we're kind of up against a wall. We're having some issues. He went and looked at it. He said, and then he reported back to Elon and said, the whole thing needs to be scrapped. And Elon looked at him and said, what do you mean? What can you save? And he said, if you want me to work on this car, if you want me to deliver a car for you, I'm going to scrap the whole thing and start from scratch. And Elon said, go ahead. Here's the keys to the kingdom. Make me a Model S. And he did. And that's coming directly from Rawlinson's mouth. I have the interview recorded. That's basically, you know, you have somebody that had a track record of doing this and bringing an incredible car to market. I mean, let's face it, the Model S, you know, it probably is the most important car in the last decade, because it proved that electric vehicles could be fast, could be fun. They could charge quickly. They can go far. They can be desirable. Were electric vehicles desirable before Tesla came out?
No.
You know, so the Model S really was the first Tesla. It wasn't technically the first one, because they had the Roadster. They made a couple thousand of them. But I mean, that was built on the Lotus Elise chassis. And, you know, I mean, it was proof of concept more than anything, that, look, we can build electric cars that go far and that are fast. The Model S was, you know, really launched Tesla. And Rawlinson was a major driving force behind it. So that's number one. When I looked at the people, the factory. I mean, they built a factory, a greenfield factory. They didn't, get a factory from another company at a discount because it was, it was a closed factory and they need to retool it. And it's kind of like, you're wondering.
Lord's down.
Yeah, exactly. That was more of a political stunt. In my opinion, Lordstown than anything, the factory and wrong, Mike Pence going, I think the Trump administration basically forced GM to sell it to them because they were concerned about the how it would look when you're losing jobs and so forth. Right after he said, we're not gonna allow companies to lay people off, like a month later, GM's, oh yeah, we're closing Lordstown.
I don't think you're wrong there.
I agree. And then all of a sudden, somehow a week or two later, oh, with no jobs are going to be lost, a new company's going to take it over. And then there's Pence on stage talking about it. And during that big press conference, they didn't say anything about the vehicles. Mm-hmm. It was just about America and jobs and, okay, tell me about your truck. The fact that we didn't get any information about the truck at that point, I was like, okay, this is like, red flags. So, Bruce, I don't have... a formula to say, okay, this is what makes a company seem like it's going to make it. And this, you just have to look at all the signs and everything. I never trusted Nikola. I never trusted the management of that company. Milton, so I never, I never really put much stock in Nikola. I'm still not sold on Lordstown.
Should you be.
Yeah, no, I did think, no, I mean, they're not dead, but it's not looking good. I'm not throwing the dirt on them yet. See how small that motor is?
Yeah.
That's 700 horsepower.
That's crazy. Yeah,
we're looking at it now on YouTube.
Yeah. Look, it's not as wide as the tire. So, yeah, sorry, I keep forgetting that your listeners are just listening in.
That's fine. That's fine. So we want you to be watching.
But that said, I have to tell you the truth, Bruce. I made a mistake once. Byton, the Chinese company, right. Byton. I was saying that, look, this company's going to make it, and I had gone to China twice with them. I saw their factory being built out. All their executives, their plant manager, they hired all the right people, all from BMW and Tesla and all the major OEMs, all the key people on their team had done this for established OEMs. So they had like a really great team behind them. But the one thing that I wasn't really counting on or thinking about was the Chinese government. And they got involved with that with FAW. And I think some behind the scenes deals were made. And I think that's what that did Byton in as much as anything, was just that, I think FAW wanted to either take over their factory or wanted their tech. And, that they had owned a good portion of Byton at the time. And, I think they just made a power play and basically said, okay, you guys are going to go away now and we're going to take your assets.
I mean, it's always hard to judge. I always think back on the Fisker Karma versus the Tesla Model S. And I remember covering those models at the same time. Mm-hmm. And maybe it was different for you, but it always seemed like if you just looked purely on paper, Fisker had the advantage. They had the names, they had... I don't know if they had the money, but they certainly had the name recognition of all of the various executives and the people behind it. And they made a vehicle. They're Fisker Karmas that exist, but they died. Now it's the Rivero or whatever it is, or whoever owns them. But Tesla, they just had the right alchemy of stuff that they managed to go through. So it's just always hard to judge who's going to survive and who's going to die.
Well, I'll tell you the difference between those two companies. And I went through that back when they were both kind of coming along at the same time. The reason why I had thought at that time correctly that Tesla was going to make it and Fisker wouldn't was Tesla was designing all their tech in-house and Fisker wasn't. Fisker was buying all third-party parts and kind of putting it all together in a car. They weren't like, you know, it wasn't all in-house engineering. It was like, okay, you know, we need this component. We buy it from the supplier. Now we have to make it fit. I mean, Henrik Fisker is a fantastic designer. I think his styling is excellent. And I think the car looked great, but it wasn't built. It wasn't put together well. It was kind of like cobbled together with all third-party parts. And it was very inefficient. And that was really what did it in my opinion.
And history proved you right.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And we're not seeing that with Lucid. I mean, looking at the car, I would take the Lucid over Model S just from looks. I really like the looks of Lucid. Only 2.5 seconds to 60. I don't know if I can live with that. I mean,
it's too slow.
I mean, that's not 1.9, right? I'm excited to see where Lucid goes from here. I really hope it sticks. I really hope they expand because I'm with you, Tom. I think it's an engineering marvel.
It really is. And, you know, a lot of people don't realize, you know, the Formula E circuit.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
All of the cars use Lucid batteries.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yeah. So they have their own proprietary battery tech. So, I mean, if they can withstand, now it's not the same cells that they use in production cars because there's different cells for different purposes, mm-hmm. but that's definitely a big bonus that, you know, Formula E, you know, can get any batteries on the market. You know, they can buy from anyone. Anyone would love to say we are the official battery pack supplier for Formula E, but mm-hmm. Lucid is the one that did it. And they actually, I don't know if you remember, the first 4 or 5 years of a Formula E, they had to swap cars midway through the race.
That was a big sticking point amongst motorsport fans, the fact that the cars couldn't go a whole race. Yeah.
Well, do you know what enabled them to go the whole race?
I don't. You're going to tell me, though.
Lucid batteries. When they switched to Lucid batteries, the car could then do the whole race. So, that's a big feather in their cap. Now, they're not called Lucid because Lucid has a sub company. I forget the name of it. If you saw like Formula E battery supplier, it wouldn't say Lucid. It's a different name. I forget the name. It's like
They started out as Ativa or something.
Yeah,
like
Ativa.
That, right?
That's the name that they use for the battery tech.
Okay.
Right. Yeah, Ativa. That's right.
Gotcha.
Yeah, I was thinking Aptera, and I didn't want to say that because I know it's not Aptera.
Yeah.
Another bad car name not to bring up.
Yeah.
So. Well, Smith, you, over the weekend, you took a trip to Michigan, and that trip, you got to drive a Mustang Mach-E.
So
also, you're kind of an EV first time. Is it your first EV you've ever driven, or first in
like I've driven golf carts. I've driven golf carts, if that matters.
That doesn't.
This is my first EV experience along with my first Mach-E experience. Yeah.
Okay.
Took a trip to Michigan for a wedding, and I also combined it with a little bit of work because everybody has reviewed the Mach-E at this point, and just about everybody loves the Mach-E. And I've loved the Mach-E since it first came out. I thought it looked great.
But
being a traditional Mustang owner, my take from the beginning was this thing is not a Mustang. And some others have said that. And like I said, a lot of journalists have covered it. But how many of those journalists are legit Mustang people? And by that, I mean own more than one. Check, I've owned three.
Own one currently.
Own one currently. Check, I've got that. Been involved in Mustang events. Check, I've done that. Been in Mustang clubs. Yeah, check, I've done that too. Driven every single Mustang generation. Yes, I've done that too, including the Mustang that everybody loves to hate, the Mustang II.
I was about to say, one of the world's few Mustang II enthusiasts.
I mean, okay, yeah, I can call myself an enthusiast on that. So I mean, I'm definitely the Mustang enthusiast. I don't consider myself a traditional Mustang enthusiast though, because I don't see one specific type of Mustang with a V8. That's the only thing you can have. Blah blah. No, that's a bunch of crap. And I also like a lot of cars in general. And sorry, Mustang enthusiasts, most of the hardcore Mustang enthusiasts, all they see is a horse and then they make fun of everything else. So I'm an enthusiast, but I'm not the typical enthusiast. Point being, what does a Mustang enthusiast really think of the Mach-E? And this was a good opportunity for me to drive one. So I'm grateful for Ford that loaned me one while I was in town. And I don't want to go through the whole thing because I am writing up a full review that's going to be on Motor One in the next week or two. But I will say this. I loved the Mach-E. I loved it more than I was expecting to love it. Is it worthy of the Mustang name? No, but not for the reasons you're probably thinking. I think it's much, much better than the Mustang than just...
You hadn't told me that, huh?
I mean, is it worthy of the name? It's more like the name isn't worthy of the car. And my argument from the beginning was Ford is calling this Mustang because it's a new vehicle. It's an electric vehicle. They're afraid it's not going to stand on its own. So they're going to try to put a little bit of Mustang aura. They're going to try to tap into a little bit of that Mustang marketing drive to help convince people, hey, check this thing out. And I wish they hadn't done that because the car absolutely stands on its own. You could still say it's Mustang inspired. It still has Mustang looks. But driving it, my impressions were that anybody who likes performance, if you think an electric car is going to be boring or you'll have nothing to do with it, you need to shut up right now. You need to go and drive one because there isn't a single person out there who loves performance. There isn't a single person that wouldn't love that immediate hit you get as soon as you touch the throttle on an electric car. This thing was far from soulless. There were a couple criteria that I had in mind when I was driving this as to whether or not I was going to decide, okay, is it a Mustang or not? You can talk about definitions all you want. You can say, oh, it has to be two doors. It has to be rear-wheel drive. It has to have a V8. You can debate those definitions. Over time, really the only true Mustang definition has been two doors and rear-wheel drive. And you can get a Mach-E in rear-wheel drive. So now it's just down to two doors versus four doors. So I wanted to go a little bit more on the intangible side, and I broke it down to like this. Every Mustang I've ever driven, it always feels kind of not necessarily small, but it feels like it kind of wraps around you. You're sitting more in the middle of the car because you typically have that long bonnet in front of you and not much else behind you. On that respect, it failed because I didn't feel like I was sitting in the middle of the car. There's still kind of that long bonnet in front of you. You still get a little bit of that kind of wraps around you feeling, but it definitely felt like I was in a crossover, something that sits up a little bit higher. Your seating position feels like it sits a little bit higher. So on that respect, it didn't meet my criteria. The other criteria, and this is even more intangible, and I call this the devil on your shoulder effect. And I hope Mustang people and performance people understand what I'm saying there. It's that effect of when you get behind the wheel, is there something about the car that puts that little imaginary devil on your right shoulder that wants you to do all the bad stuff that you shouldn't do, right? In every Mustang I've driven, even the Mustang 2 with its 120 horsepower, 115 horsepower V8, even that little car, there was the devil on my shoulder because the car just feels so small and lightweight. It's like you're coming up to a corner. Come on, just flick that wheel and stab the gas. There's torque. It'll go. It'll come around on you. Let's have some fun. Let's do this. Even in some of the V6 Fox bodies that I've driven, there's that feeling of, just come on, just torque that wheel around. We can have a little bit of fun. You can spin a donut here. We'll drive. We can do this. I got that in the Mach-E, and this isn't the GT version I drove. I drove a Mustang Mach-E Premium, mm-hmm. all-wheel drive, 346 horsepower, somewhere around there. 0 to 60 in 5 seconds. It sounds slow. It's not. It's still with that instant torque. All you have to do is touch the gas. just touch the gas. You can slot yourself into any spot in traffic, anywhere you need to go. There was always that devil on my shoulder that wanted me to do that. It's just like, just go ahead, just touch the gas, just touch the gas, just a little bit more. Just, that's all you need to do. That's all you need to do. Come on, let's snap your neck back a little bit. Let's go. That little devil in the shoulder was always there. And that's a big deal for me, because that is very much a Mustang feel. As far as the rest of the vehicle goes, I mean, it felt very comfortable inside. The seats weren't what I would call, you know, performance oriented. It gripped me just fine. Going through corners, I mean, yeah, it has bite. I wouldn't hesitate going a little bit faster than some of the posted limits in corners. Not that I did that on this approximately 200-mile drive around Southeast Michigan. I did exercise it a little bit, but I was restrained enough to not listen to that devil all of the time. But the corners, it didn't feel like a Mustang to me. It felt like something that's tuned, that can handle corners well, but I still didn't get that feeling there. But my takeaway is that it's better. I mean, there's a little bit more room in the back seat. You can fold on the seats. You can pop up the hatch. And yes, people, Mustangs have had hatchbacks in the past, so that's not a disqualifier there. Having that little extra space, it's cool. My takeaway is that, no, I still don't think it should be called a Ford Mustang Mach-E, but during my trip, I found myself calling it the Mustang. And at the end of the trip, I didn't care that it was called Mustang. And I think that's pretty significant as well. I didn't care that it's called Mustang. There are going to, it's attracting lots of buyers. I think there's something like 16,000 sales or so far this year. I've contacted Ford. I'm trying to get a better breakdown of numbers that I'm going to include in my article, just to see how well it's selling. I mean, look, the hardcore Mustang enthusiasts, they're not going to touch this car. That's fine. It wasn't built for them. It's going to appeal to a much, much broader audience, just like the V6 and the four-cylinder Mustangs have throughout the entire Mustang run. Though that's always been the volume seller, that's always been the volume buyer for Mustang, has been the lower trim levels. I wouldn't call this a lower trim level by any means. I think it's a fantastic electric vehicle. And for my first electric experience, I mean, I feel like maybe I'm a little bit spoiled. I was very reassured to find charging points all over in Southeast Michigan. There's a little bit of a learning curve. Tom, I'm your videos were immensely helpful and just kind of, you know, showing the difference between various charging stations. I never did a proper DC fast charge on this. I was always at some of the smaller stations. But the takeaway is I drove a Mustang for the entire weekend, drove it 200 miles, and I quote unquote gassed it up for $1.95, because I paid $1.95 at one of the charging stations in Royal Oak for a couple hours. I found another charging station at a Meijer down by Allen Park, right by Ford headquarters, charged up there for free. The hotel I stayed at, that Tom, you pointed me to, thank you for that. Their charger was completely free. And that one was the simplest, because it was just, okay, pick it up, plug it in. That's it. No app, no nothing. That's went inside.
How it usually works at the hotels. That's why I recommend it. If you ever have, and to your listeners, if you ever have an electric vehicle and you're staying at a hotel, just find a hotel that has a charger, because they're almost always free. And it's the best thing. You plug in when you get there and you go wake up in the morning, your car's fully charged and it was free. It was like getting a free tank of gas to stay at a hotel room.
Yeah. And I mean, as I looked around, I mean, not every hotel has a charger, but I was surprised at the number that did. And this one, it recommended, well, it asked, you know, you just stay there for 2 hours, free it up. It was only one charger with two spots. So I charged up for 2 hours, went back downstairs because I got there pretty early in the day, went back downstairs, looked outside. I was still the only car there. Nobody was in the other spot. I went into the office and I was like, hey, I've still got a ways to go on my car. Do you mind if I leave it there for a while? And they were like, oh, nobody uses that thing. Just keep it there all night. So left it there all night. When I got up in the morning, I had 224 miles, you know, fully charged up.
All right, guys.
Ready to drive the 1 mile back to the quick park to drop it off.
We are at an hour and 18 minutes, which means we need to wrap things up here. Yeah. I will say, super real quick, I got to visit my parents this weekend. They stopped at a rest area along the Ohio Turnpike, and my mom showed me a picture. They were installing both Tesla superchargers and something she couldn't identify. I assume Electrify America. I don't know, but...
Probably, yeah. The rate that infrastructure is being installed now, guys, is amazing across the country. It really is. I mean, for someone that's been following electric vehicles for more than a decade now, for years there was nothing. And now it is accelerating like crazy. And if the current Build Back Better program that's in the Congress now actually goes through, that it will accelerate it even more because there's a ton of money in there for electric vehicle. Well, no, I think actually what was passed now has infrastructure in it, but there'll be even more. But the rate that we're installing DC fast charging now is incredible. You can go almost anywhere in the country. Now, there's some of the northern states in the middle of the country, the Dakotas.
Yep.
There's not a lot of charging there. I know.
I tell you there's not a lot of gas stations in spots out here either, Tom.
But for I mean, I could go anywhere right now. I could hop in my car and just drive to California. I could drive to Florida. I could drive to Texas from New Jersey without a problem at all. So, I mean, the infrastructure's there.
Yep.
And I know we're up against it. We got to go. But two things I want to point out about your experience really quickly.
Yes, sure.
Handling on the Mach-E, I admit, is one of the little bit of the weak points. You said it didn't live up maybe to a Mustang with handling. That because the Mach-E that you drove and the base Mach-E and even the Select, that Ford put, they kind of undersized the tires. And I think that was to give it better range because it was less rolling resistance, less friction. But the GT and GT Performance have much better rubber and wider tires. The handling is night and day. And then you talked about the seats. You're correct. They don't really hold you in place that much on the regular Mach-E, but the GT and GT Performance both have upgraded seats. The GT seats are great. The GT Performances are fantastic. Those are the two things you pointed out. And, you know, we're talking performance here. So you got to get yourself in a GT Performance, Chris.
And to be fair, I mean, the Fox Body LX that I had, there's no conceivable way anybody could go around any sort of corner in that car without flying out of the seats. My 95 has messy. I mean, it wasn't so much that the seats just didn't live up to Mustang expectations. It's that they just didn't contribute to the overall feel that I would normally have in the car. But I mean, you're right. I mean, I haven't driven, but I've been a passenger in a 1980 Mustang Gia, which had the, it was the two door sedan with the four cylinder. That was about 75 or 80 horsepower. I mean, that thing had no performance, but I mean, you still just kind of get that pseudo special kind of wraps around you a little bit kind of feel. I cruised Woodward Avenue while I was in Detroit with the Mach-E, with my wife who was with me. We have both cruised Woodward during the Dream Cruise. We did it in my 03 SVT Cobra. And, you know, I was asking her, I said, do you feel special going down Woodward in this Mustang? And she was just like, not really. So, I mean, it's a cool car. But the point I'm trying to make is, I'm still a little on the fence, but I've come to a definite conclusion that I don't care that it's called Mustang. I think that's fine. And maybe that means the definition or people's traditional definition can expand to include this car. And that's coming from a Mustang enthusiast and an owner. So bravo Ford on a great step into the EV world. I think it's a fantastic car.
All right. Well, we got to wrap this up. But Ford, if you're listening, if you could go back to the very beginning of the year and hear him talking about the Mach-E from them to now.
Oh, don't get me going on the shrimp thing, man.
No, that's still stupid. The shrimp and the buffalo wings are still the dumbest thing in the world.
That came up several times on this trip, too. I'm looking under the hood. It's like, Hell no, I'm not putting shrimp in here.
So real quick, for anyone listening, I know we're over. The video game focused website, giantbomb.com, the one host on there is a car guy, and someone animated their discussion about the frunk on the Mach-E mocking the shrimp and the barbecue wings. And it's hilarious.
Oh, we got to see it.
I can't play it here for copy, but just... Giant Bomb Mach-E, you'll find
gotta see it.
It's funny.
Check it out. Tom, thanks so much. I know it's late for you. Thanks so much for being on
your time has been limited, but thank you so much for joining us. You are you're the most knowledgeable EV guy I know, and I think you are amongst the most knowledgeable EV guys in this country. So thank you so much for spending this time with us. It is so appreciated.
Oh, thanks for having me. It's been great.
Where can people find you at? Shout out all of your social channels here.
So I make videos for Inside EVs. I also am one of the senior editors. So I write articles for Inside EVs and I contribute. Kyle and I do most of the videos for the Inside EVs YouTube channel. And I have my own YouTube channel called State of Charge. And that's has a lot to do with charging electric vehicles.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
That's it.
Very good.
I'm on Twitter at Tomalog.
Okay,
and we'll have links in the article.
Yeah, the story we put up on Friday. We'll be linking the hell out of you because we've been watching all your videos this evening. So thank you.
And of course, you can get me on Twitter at chwriting. I even threw up a couple of photos from my trip this weekend on Twitter. So at chwriting, Bruce, you're at ChrisBruce1985.
That's right. I was on vacation and I never really looked at Twitter. I'll have to go back and look at your photos because I didn't see them. So
just a couple quick photos at the old Model T factory. It felt rather poignant
taking
Ford's most advanced vehicle today to where the mass production all started at the old Model T factory there in Highland Park. It was kind of a surreal experience. I'll be talking about that in the article, too.
And famously, the reason, as far as I understand, Tesla didn't have a Model E is because Ford owned the Model E trademark. So they had to go Model 3 is the way that story goes. But
that's correct.
Yeah. But thank you, everyone. As always, good afternoon, good evening, or good night. We love that you're listening to us. You know, we try to get through comments. So like I said, Smith and I were both on vacation this past weekend. I didn't respond to any email comments. I did respond to all the YouTube comments, though, mostly with a thanks for listening and in some cases, some kind of extra stuff along in there. So we read everything. We look at everything. We see everything. And we love that you're listening. And we love that you're commenting. And we love that you're subscribing. So, it's been another great episode, and thanks, everybody. Good night.
We'll see you. Bye-bye.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.